Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Creativity. In our culture, creativity is often linked with the arts and artists, but creativity can also be found in science and engineering and all sorts of disciplines and professions. Today on All Sides, how do we strengthen and nurture creativity, and how do we provide creative educational experiences for children of all ages, like me? Joining us now is Mimi Chenfeld. She's a teacher, writer, poet, and dancer. She's the author of Creative Experiences for Young Children and Teaching in the Key of Life. Mimi has taught in Columbus since 1970. Her specialty, creativity and fun. In fact, one reviewer of her dubbed her the Queen of Fun. For that reason alone, she's a frequent guest on All Sides. Welcome back, Mimi.
Thank you, Ann.
Also joining us is local author Michael J. Rosen. He just finished his latest book, The Hound Dogs, Haiku, and Other Poems for Dog Lovers. A former Thurber House Literary Director, Michael is the writer, editor, and illustrator of more than 80 books for both children and adults. He has received numerous awards, including the National Jewish Book Award, the Simon Wiesenthal Museum of Tolerance Book Award, and the Ohioana Library Career Citation in Children's Literature. Welcome back, Michael.
Thanks much.
Let's see. A question for listeners. Do you think creativity is overrated or underrated? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, we talk about creativity. We had the conversation a million times, but you have to keep having it. You know, they're getting ready to do the Ohio graduation tests coming up in March, and is for as much talk as in for all the things we know about creativity, you know, almost to the point of the molecular level, what we know about it, and still they keep passing laws that don't necessarily take creativity into account. Michael, how do you fight it?
I don't have an army on hand, but I recognize that to make a distinction between creative and not creative is arbitrary. There isn't a black and white, and that all perception and all experience is based in your appreciating of, your understanding of, your connecting to what's happening, to the news, to your fellow human beings. And if you don't have that fundamental willingness to be empathic, to think larger and longer, which is really what art does, what creativity does, not so fast. Let's think again. Try to be present. And this is not a culture that's eager to be present and sustained in a particular moment.
Can I add
on? Sure.
The question was a great one, Anne. And I think going along with what Michael just said, is these are areas that are harder to measure. It is still, no matter how much we know, and we don't really know a lot about creativity, we really still, compared to what we know about other areas of learning and knowledge, we still don't really know a lot about what is it exactly, how does it work, why are humans, you know, why is it part of every human every human's birthright to be born with this ability to be creative? We just have no idea. So it's hard to measure. And so because things are hard to measure, we don't really measure them, and they're not tested. And the things that are tested are valued more because we have, as Michael says, we have a culture that really demands, you know, results. We want to know what's going on. How good are you? How bad are you? What are you, successful or failing? And that's our culture dynamic.
And it's the actual pursuit of those results that begins to denigrate the creativity that we're all born with.
But we also applied the same thing for teaching for years. It was a nebulous thing. What makes great teaching? How can you teach a teacher? The same thing would have been said for creative writing. You know, 25 years ago, there weren't creative writing programs. And how can you teach someone to be creative was, you know, when this, it was the same thing applied to animals. Why do animals don't have feelings? You know, you can't tell. You know, we can't measure that, as Mimi's suggesting. So all those benighted perceptions we've come around to revisit sluggishly.
No, we
still
devalue. I want to revisit it. That's the whole issue. We don't revisit and we don't honor. And we don't have ways, you know, to say this is really worthwhile. You know, this is worthwhile that our kids are able to problem solve and are able to think outside of the box and are able to use imagination and use all the various areas that they know about to put something together in a way that makes sense to them, that we don't know how to measure that yet.
You know, and kids that are looking, say, in their sophomore, junior in high school, they're getting ready for college, and they're being told, you know, well, when you talk about when the leaders at the very top are talking about our colleges and universities, they're like, what are we teaching them so they can get a job? The value, the intrinsic value of education, just as a making you a better human being and more fully developed and therefore a better decision maker or creator or engineer or scientist or whatever, that seems to be going away completely. There was a brief shining moment in there. It felt like in the 70s or 80s, and now it's going away. They have to get jobs.
You don't know what influences what, but the testing, you know, when we've talked about this, you know, notice how much influence we've had to change it. Everyone who's listening, you know, this is a terrible story, but years and years ago, I think I was on, and we were talking about the stifling of creativity, and, you know, that if Vincent van Gogh was a child in school now, you know, with a very limited time to do something original, and it had to fit into a box and had to say, can this be tested and measured? He is drawing swirly stars, and, you know, they say it's the swirly stars. Vincent, you've got to get with the program. Here is how you do stars, and this is what's going to be tested. So he cuts off his ear. I was kidding. So then I said kiddingly, you know, I think everyone out there should just send a little ear in to all the testers. You know, I'm kidding. And, oh, my gosh, you should have heard the response.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That woman is a sick woman. but so what Michael said, revisit, that was very nicely put. But I kind of think a revolution, because just one quick thing. Years and years ago when we were worshiping the Japanese education, I don't know if you guys remember, yep. Michael, remember Japanese education was the top, most esteemed education in the world. And those kids were like, they were working night and day, Saturday, Sundays. If they got one mark below what they wanted to get, they shaved off their eyebrows. They committed harikari. I mean, the kids were stressed. But they did well on tests. And then they said, but we are not teaching creative minds. We're just teaching our kids to do rote learning and measure up to the testing. You Americans are teaching creative ways of thinking, so we need to learn that from you. That was then, when you said the 70s and 80s. And they were looking to us, and now they really can't look to us as a whole society, because we are devaluing those very qualities that they were missing.
614-292-8513. That's the number to call if you want to join our conversation with Michael J. Rosen, author of The Hound Dog's Haiku and Other Poems for Dog Lovers. We'll have Michael read from the book in a few minutes. And, of course, Mimi Chenfeld, a teacher, writer, poet, dancer, author of Creative Experiences for Young Children and Teaching in the Key of Life. Dave in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Yeah, hi, Ann. I just have a brief comment. I was in school in the dark ages. I'm 85, and when I went to school and you majored in art and music and writing, which I did all through first grade through high school and college, you were a nerd. So that it paid off as I retired as a successful advertising executive, and I am deeply involved in music and art to this day, and I'm enjoying it very much. I had teachers along the way that helped me, and I hand them all the credit. So it was, even back then, it was done and possible. So I just wanted to make that comment.
Dave, what I appreciate about what you're saying is the word nerd. I mean, over the decades, there have been different words for that suggest that outside perspective, that sense of difference that artists often bring. And I think if it were to boil down to a word to me, it's humility. That there isn't a fast answer. We don't understand everything. Life is going by at a pace that the speed of life is just, it exceeds our ability to understand it. And it's only through creativity and the arts that we can understand the impact that such things have on our lives. And it takes enormous humility to sit back and say, I don't know. And there begins the process.
Dave, can I add on?
Yes.
I think another point you made was really important, which is that your teachers encouraged you from first grade on. And, you know, we're really talking, and I know Ann, Michael, and I are just like one mind of this, that we need to develop the ability of children to fall in love with learning and become lifelong learners. We use that expression. It's overused, but mm-hmm. under happening. And the point that we're making is if you lose those children at young ages, it's really hard to get them back. So you were lucky that you had teachers who encouraged you and made room for the things you loved and enjoyed, because to this day, you're still celebrating those activities.
Yeah, they even let me draw in the margins on my papers, so I appreciated that.
Yeah. You know, as I am a like certified doodler, Dave.
Yes.
I'm
Well, thank you for your comments, and I encourage anybody who's in the creative world to continue, because it's the way life is.
Thank you.
All right.
614-292-8513 if you want to join the conversation. Don't forget, you can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and comment there as well. Mimi.
Yeah, I wanted to add on to the early childhood training. We have just, this culture has gotten just, I can't even use the words to describe how developmentally inappropriate things are happening and have happened in the last 15 years, which is pushing down the curriculum so that the youngest kids are no longer using play as a way of learning, which is the way children learn, and kindergarten kids are in first grade curriculum.
And on top of that, all the structured play.
Oh, yeah. They don't know how to play. There are many children who really do not know how to play. They're giving courses on how to play because their little thumbs are working, you know, when they know how to click and clack and do that kind of thing. But to just play, just have, you know, make believe and have blocks and have dress up areas and just have kitchen areas where kids used to play at life. That's how they did. That's how they learned. They learned their language. They learned cooperative learning. They learned how to problem solve. They learned how to make decisions. They learned how to celebrate an idea that kept going because it was a story that they were in and they were making up. I mean, when we cut that out, which we have cut out in many, many programs in this country, and just we've given the kindergarten kids, you know, formalized structured learning, and we find out that it's ridiculous. The places that have teaching kids reading and those children are the best readers in the world, they don't start them reading till 7 years old in the Scandinavian countries. But do we say, you know, we have been developmentally inappropriate? No, we go, no, more paperwork, you know, more handouts. Let's give it to
more
them.
More worksheets.
More worksheets. The F word, worksheets.
We have to take a quick break. My guests are Mimi Chenfeld and also Michael Rosen. If you have a question or comment for them, we welcome them. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Join Kappa, WOSU, and Capital Crossroads SID for a special screening of Columbus Neighborhoods, Franklinton Downtown, at the Ohio Theater on Tuesday, February 14th. The program begins with the Ohio Mighty Morgan organ pre-show at 11:30 a.m. Pre-sale tickets include a fresh box lunch and the chance to win tickets to the Broadway series production of Memphis. For tickets to the screening, call Kappa at 614-469-0939 or visit columbusneighborhoods.org.
This is 89.7 NPR News, 40 degrees with sunshine in downtown Columbus, and the sunny skies will continue with a high near 50 today. Clear skies tonight and a low right around 30 degrees. Increasing clouds for Tuesday, but still mild temperatures, a high of 46. There is a chance of snow Tuesday night, a low of 29 degrees, and a slight chance of snow Wednesday morning, a high of 36. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about creativity with two very creative people. Michael J. Rosen, author of The Hound Dog's Haiku and other poems for dog lovers, as well as many other books. Also, Mimi Chenfeld, she's teacher, writer, poet, dancer, author of Creative Experiences for Young Children and Teaching in the Key of Life. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. An email from Bob. He says, creativity and questioning authority. If we don't encourage both, we'll be limited in how much of either we can do. When bosses encourage their reports to think outside the box, don't they mean to think into their boss's box? Michael? Mimi pointed to my nose.
I don't have much respect for the box. I mean, you know, for most of us, it's a sphere, it's a triangle, and I think if you right at that moment revisit not the answers, but revisit the questions that you're asking. I mean, I think we take a lot of stereotypical procedural efforts because they're simpler.
And that begins in the classroom.
Begins in the classroom. Here, when I visit schools, one of the simplest exercises that I do with groups is I help them recognize that we right now gratify kids in two ways. The first set of gratification, you raise your hand. You get an idea. You're called on. Ah, you've got it. Okay, I'm going to. So whatever the assignment is, they're gratified by the fact that they have a start. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to write about this, or I'm going to do a project on that. The next place we gratify kids is I turned it in. I'm finished. I'm done. Can I do something else? Sure. Go ahead and some free reading time. That big, wonderful space between the two, we're absent. There's no joyful reinforcement of that whole wandering, wondering, mining, molding, the process of making. We don't have time. Or we've just shrugged our shoulders and said, I'm not sure.
Let me go on with that, with what Michael just said. He said process, and that is what we have no patience with as a culture. It's the process, and we go right to the product. You know, I have my four little nudges for creativity, mm-hmm. and the first little nudge is what else? And Michael just kind of introduced that, because the minute you say what else, you think of more. But these kids are like, I finished. I'm done. I did it. And if you don't, I try to work with teachers so they don't say this is unacceptable or you could do better, more just to say the two words, gee, what else can you think of? This is really very interesting. I like your idea. What else can you add on to it? How else can you connect something that's just right now, not in your mind, but in a minute it might just pop in your mind? Or just stay with it a while and just keep saying, it's like aerobics for the brain. But our kids are so used to, and the way we teach, you know, maybe we have 10 words for winter. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Anne. You are a gifted child. You just had 10 words, you know, A, instead of saying, what else?
Well,
10 more.
I want to pick up on what Anne said earlier, and that is, if you want to have academic excellence, it is not at the expense of creativity. And here's a perfect example. If you have a kid, let's say the assignment is, okay, pick something from our unit on Ohio history and write a letter from someone in Ohio history. Okay, I'm going to do whatever. The kid comes up with the first thing. So probably most everyone else in the class will have thought of that same thing because we all play Family Feud. Most people think of the same few things. And what happens? We have to revise it. We have to research it. We have to find. And there's no motive or passion or interest. In fact, when it's time to read aloud, each kid stands up and says, well, here's the fourth version you've heard about this. And the classroom behavior becomes disruptive because it's boring. You're not getting any energy, any of that sparks flying because kids are feeding on one another. But if you stop for the moment and let kids be motivated by something that they've actually developed an interest in or they stumbled upon, as Mimi was suggesting, not the first thing, but the best thing you could think of. Even to say to kids, you know, as an assignment, whatever you pick, I want you to pick something that you don't think anyone else in the classroom has thought of. Suddenly, it's so much easier.
And a more interesting challenge,
exactly.
In a way. I mean,
exactly.
It's more interesting.
And they're willing to revise. They're willing to work harder because they know it's a good thing.
They have more of a stake. They're more staked in it themselves. It's more about them.
And there's another part to this. and there are many, many parts. And one of them is that there are certain, again, formulas that so many people like, quote, strategies in creative writing, which I think stifle. I mean, you know, you can say, this is really good. But when you think about it, you say, is this really good? And Michael said about revising, redoing. Almost anything now being written in many, many, many schools around the country, the formula is you write, today's a nice day. Okay, let's revise it. Let's have a group critique it. Let's go back and reason. By the time you're done, you're saying, I never want to write anything. Give me a cuneiform tablet. Give me sand. You know, give me a stick. Let me just write my name. I don't want this. In other words, if you're passionate about something and you've worked on it and it's exciting and there's joyfulness in the process, then you are motivated to say, let's get it in a shape that's presentable to others so they can share it. And then the revision and the research, you know, that whole, you know, process of editing and rewriting makes sense. But almost everything the kids write nowadays, they have to go through this, which I think is very stifling of creativity.
There's also this emphasis on length, and I've judged some kids writing competitions before, and when they were given to me, someone said to me one time, well, I think it's going to be pretty obvious who the leaders are in this, and I'm pretty sure they were talking about the kids who had the best handwriting and who wrote the most pages, when in fact, when I looked at it and read it, they were not that interesting. The more interesting kids maybe were the ones with the really horrible handwriting, but and shorter, but their thoughts just seemed more original and more vibrant than the other ones. There's a big thing on length and penmanship, which we've had talks about penmanship. That's a whole nother discussion, but
I mean, one simple thing that
and the haiku book is a very good example
of concision and compression. Yeah. Well, one of the key points that you just made is it's easy for kids to feel that when they're asked to do something, creativity is what someone else does. Oh, call on Mimi; she's the creative person in the class. When in fact, parents often ask me, what can I do to encourage? I mean, one of the simplest things is, like Mimi's question, what else? Just zoom in. What kind? Is it more creative for a kid to say, my favorite thing to eat is pie? Or, my favorite thing to eat is my grandmother's crispy apple cream pie with butternut frosting?
Then why?
And was that creative just because you were specific or longer? No, but that's the outcome we want. So it's not this huge hurdle in some cases that we're asking kids to jump over. It's
they already know the answer.
They know the answer.
They already know the answer. Sarah in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Having me and taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted your opinion, or I guess the suggestion. I find that the mindset, like my own mindset, is it's that if you have creativity, it's great. But like in long term, later on in life as an adult, maybe you won't be as successful, or you won't be able to, you know, maybe have a better income just because in college it's like, oh, you're an art major, or, you know, it's not viewed as sustainable or profitable.
Practical.
And so, yeah, practical. And I find myself, I have a six-year-old that, you know, when it's camp time or class time, I sign him up for the science camp or the math camp, and I personally probably have a creative side, but went into the sciences. And I don't know how to change that or how to start to change that, because I do want him to explore that.
Sarah. Okay, Michael. We're fighting it all, fighting over which one of us is. We're canceling each other out. Sarah, first of all, I want you to just think about something. Just because someone's in a science camp doesn't mean it can't be a creative experience.
Yes.
The whole point that we're trying to make is creativity is splashed and connecting to every area of life. And there's nothing more incredibly possible as an area of study or of passion than science. And I think we miss the creativity in science and then for turn kids off many a time because we don't use wonder, you know, and the whole idea of adventure and curiosity. So because your child is going to a science camp, is it a he, boy?
Yes, he.
And is he excited about it? Does he like? Well, that's a perfect example of, you know, finding something that you're interested in, continuing to read about it and look for it and fill your imagination with, you know, the possibilities of adventuring in it. I mean, that and math. I mean, those are some of the most creative people in the world are these great mathematical thinkers who literally we can't even imagine their minds. We can't imagine their minds, but they're very creative. How do they come up with some of the solutions to problems that worldwide mathematicians are thinking about? You know, we're thinking beyond 2 and 2 are 4. We're just thinking about the whole wonder of numbers and the whole world of nature and science.
Right.
So going back to this little what else, it's just the simplest little thing, but what else can you think? What else do you bring to it? And I would not worry about it because you're worrying about the product, like what is the practical result of? We're talking about a way of being that really celebrates imagination and curiosity and wonder. And the application of those emotions to activity.
Michael, okay.
I mean, Mimi's point, of course, about science being a huge crucible of creativity. You know, imagination is a force of nature. You have to first imagine what if we could blank, and science may be the tool to solve that. But it's the imagination, it's creativity that first makes the ambition or the desire to solve, to venture, to become.
Thanks, Sarah, for your question.
Sure, thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bob, in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Hi. I just wanted to briefly mention an experience I had in the sixth grade when I lived in Lakewood, Ohio, and I was in an art class, and our teacher told us to draw an animal. So I drew a seal, and we were going to cut that out, and I raised my hand, and I said, well, what color should the eye be? And she came over, and she said, honey, that eye can be anything you want.
It was like a
light bulb went on.
That is a beautiful story.
She said, go for it. Just do whatever you wish. All my life I remembered that.
Bob, this is why teachers have to be strengthened to be the most creative they can be in their own lives so they can respond to children in that way. Because that, look how the doors open for you.
Yeah, really. I've never forgotten that.
a small remark that's transformative. I mean, I literally can remember many mentors, Mimi being one of mine, where you saw a wall and then afterwards there's a door. You saw a window that's closed and suddenly the curtain's open. I mean, I literally remember thinking all maybe until middle of junior high school that I couldn't draw very well because it didn't look like what it was supposed to. And it took just a few comments that helped me understand that, you know, there's a kind of art that's not supposed to look like it. And that's about your perception, what does it feel like, what does it sound like, whatever it would be, but a difference than just rendering like an old master. And, you know, I don't want to be an old master, even if I'm aging fast.
He's a new master.
Thank you, Bob, for that story. That was wonderful. 614-292-8513. If you want to give us a call, you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Hal. He writes, I believe we are born creative. As a retired educator and as a graduate of the late ungraded OSU school, I concluded that grading and testing destroy our creativity. And Minnie's given you sort of the on-air high five, thumbs up, Hal. So do we have to find a happy medium, though? I mean, is testing in and of itself evil?
I mean, if the preoccupation with testing is evil. The precluding, I mean, I'm in schools all the time where teachers, you know, say we're really restricted by what we can do right now because April is our preparation for May, which is our test, which June is our assessment. You know, it's a domino effect of oppression, essentially. And I think both the teachers and the kids are underperforming because simply the pressure is misplaced.
I have a wonderful, it's not wonderful, it's terrible, but
okay.
It's excellent.
Illustrative.
Thank you, Anne. Okay. She's such a vocabulary girl. So here's a teacher who's teaching in an urban school, and the pressure is tremendous because they're not testing. You know, she's got kids with different languages. She's got kids coming from many different varied home backgrounds. Some of them are foster and grandmas, and many transient families coming in and out, and kids who have no one home to encourage them. And she's got all these kids, and of course they're not great testers because that isn't where they're at. And the school is getting all this, you know, pressure from the system because they're messing up the ratings in the country. And so testing is very big. And she teaches first grade. And the kids next year, they're going to come into second grade and they're going to start getting tested. So she sees a turtle, a big, big turtle wandering aimlessly by itself. And the turtle is fantastic, and she wants to bring it to her children, you know, just as for a day so that they could... they could just look at the turtle and shells and count the little spaces and are they really 13 and see, et cetera. But she says, how can I, said Michael, said, how can I take the time from our reading program that is structured and that is formulated and we have to cover a certain page and 2 pages every single day and it might take us longer because our kids have all these issues. I cannot bring the turtle into the class. She has a friend who teaches in one of the you know, suburban districts that the pressure's not on them because those kids are good testers and they don't have to start as soon. Gives the turtle to her friend who teaches first grade in the other school.
Wow.
Case closed. That's a true story.
Wow. That's just sad.
It is. It's sad, but that's exactly what's happening.
Leticia in Pataskala, you're on the air. That was a sad story, wasn't it?
Teaching in the key of death.
Welcome to the show, Leticia.
Hi. I wanted to make a comment about how children don't know how to play anymore. And they're stuck in front of a computer by choice a lot of times. They're stuck in front of the television. I know I have a friend and some of my nephews. They're always talking about what level they can get in a game. And I said, well, what can you come up with as a game? And they're like, well, why do I have to? It's right there. I can go buy it. I'm like, well, you know what? Children nowadays have no creativity, where they don't think on their own 2 feet. They just choose to let someone else think for them. And if the parents took time to, you know, like my parent took time with me and encouraged me to come up with my own ideas, my own games, go outside, play with my friends, use that in school, I think it would help them a lot more when it comes to academics.
Michael Rosen?
Leticia, no one would contradict what you're saying, I fear. And I could find evidence, just as you have, with that sense that kids left to their own devices are somewhat lost. When you call on kids to come up with ideas for what they want to do, write about, be, it's often the manufactured ideas that we get from the television, from the computer. I want to be a this character or that character. Play, in some ways, is circumscribed by participating in a narrative that is already being broadcast and it's on your various devices. And it does put, you know, we do have to look to parents to say.
And just, teachers.
Well, of course, and teachers. But, you know, in the time that I have with you, I need you to think about off-screen time. I need to monitor the amount. You know, we ask parents to monitor a whole lot of things, kids' aggressive tendencies, kids' learning. So the idea that they have to mind kids' ability to have genuine play and adventure and wonder and awe is paramount.
Leticia, thanks for that call. We appreciate it. We are going to return to our conversation about creativity right after this. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
In her recent films, Meryl Streep has transformed herself into Julia Child and now Margaret Thatcher.
It's not about the audience. It's all about fooling the other actors into believing that you are who you say you are, because I can read that immediately in their eyes, you know.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Meryl Streep. Her new film is The Iron Lady. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And join us for All Sides with Ann Fisher tomorrow from 10 until noon. In the first hour, the city of Steubenville is hosting Governor Kasich's State of the State address. We'll have a preview of the speech. And then in the second hour, it's Tech Tuesday. That's All Sides tomorrow from 10 until noon. And then join 89.7 NPR News tomorrow afternoon at 1 as Governor Kasich does take his speech on the road to Steubenville. You can listen to live coverage of the speech tomorrow afternoon at 1 on 89.7.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
WOSU Public Media will host Chefs in the City Thursday, May 3rd. Tickets are on sale now. Visit WOSU.org/chefs for more information and tickets. Sunshine today, a high of near 50 degrees. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. My guests, Mimi Chenfeld, also Michael Rosen. We're talking about creativity in children, how to teach creativity, or what does it even mean? If you have a question, comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And I'm going to Katie now in Westerville. Welcome to the show, Katie.
Hi. Thanks, Ann. Hi, Mimi. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Katie.
I have a 7-year-old son who, he's an only child. He's got step siblings much older, but never have lived in the house with him. I'm older. I'm 50. His dad is 60. He went to the School for Young Children in Clintonville for 2 years, which I loved.
Very good school.
It's a wonderful school. And I subbed there, have subbed a couple of times. I'm a former teacher, and I'm trying to figure out a way to help him. I've got him in a private school, but he's, I mean, every single day he wakes up, he does not want to go to school. He's a good student, but he's a worrier. He's a perfectionist, and but he's very creative. Every time we go on a walk, he's dragging something home, to, and he's always got plans, you know, how what he's going to build with that. What he's got a big bin that he keeps all of his things in, you know, that he collects on his walks from wherever he goes. He's coming home with stuff in his pockets, and he's constantly building and creating. And but I'm just, he's just struggling so in school, and he's asked me to homeschool him, which I don't think is a good idea for, I know, I don't think it's good for my sanity, and I don't think as an only child it's really good for him, because he's a homebody. If it's his choice, he will stay home. He'll have friends come over and play here, but he's always wanted to stay at home, and he's happy in his backyard. He'll entertain himself for hours, but... So,
Katie, you'll just have to give him more worksheets at home than he'll want to go to school.
No more worksheets.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Oh.
Now, Katie, it seems like you're honoring and recognizing the individual that your child is. And I'm willing to say that, you know, it's okay that kids struggle with some things and that not everything is easy. You know, you move through life gravitating towards the things that you're good at and that you enjoy, and kind of away from the things that you're maybe not so good and don't enjoy. Not that we should overlook the fact that your child is struggling and that you do whatever you can to address that, but I was most taken by the fact that you're encouraging his collecting, his individuality, his building, his passion. You're there as his audience, and as you say, for an only child, that's all the more important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let me go on with that. Because I want to add a component that Michael didn't address, which is I'm not too happy with kids being unhappy a lot or having, you know, you can have challenges, but
right.
when a child says, I don't want to go to school and I'm not happy and I'm getting cramps in the morning, I think it's really something you need to attend to, mm-hmm. which is maybe what's going on and what is going on with the teachers. And I think you need to go in. Sometimes families don't go in and talk to a teacher or teachers to say, this is what's happening at home, and they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes teachers don't even know the other parts of him that are the collecting and the wonderful walks and the adventuring. And sometimes that's very important, not sometimes, all the time.
Yeah.
That's important for teachers to know that about children and include it in their offerings every day. Possibilities
yeah.
for that kind. I mean, if one time, then maybe a teacher would just honor that or just turn that into an experience that the class has together or a sharing. It might make all the difference between life and death.
It has made a big difference. The teacher he's got now is I think she's doing the best that she can in a room full of, you know, 27 seven-year-olds and one part-time assistant. And I've offered to come in and help, and we've done some things together. And I'm trying to bring a little bit of SYC into that school, you know. And I would love to see them lean more towards the whole Montessori role. And, you know, but I'm walking that fine line of trying to be an advocate for Andrew but not be one of those parents that when they see walking in the door, oh, Lord, here she comes again, you know.
Well, Katie, you could also explore, because you're in a very good public school system. You could also explore the public schools that he would be able to go to and see. You know, you can just walk in and ask the principal, I'd like to see what's going on in second grade or whatever mm-hmm. grade he's going okay. into. May I come in and observe and just see what's happening? So many times people reject a school without even knowing, you know, how really wonderful it could be. So that might be another possibility.
Thank you, Katie, for that call. 614-292-8513. We have lots of people calling in. Michael, did you want to?
Okay. Yeah, please.
Russell and Canal Winchester, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Russell.
Hello, Ann. I listen to your show quite a bit, and I do get a lot of information. I do appreciate you guys. So
thank you.
I have a daughter of mine. She's a fifth grader, and they have a home class that they go to. And, of course, they have special advanced kids, and they have my daughter's on an IEP, so she goes to a separate room. One thing that really bothers her, I guess, is she came home the other night crying, and the kids were getting A's and B honor roll awards and different things that they could present them. And she was depressed, and I don't think that that's helping my daughter at all. I mean, she's a fifth grader. She's still developing. You know, she's just turned 11, and I've been trying to tell the school that we appreciate you giving awards to kids that deserve it and everything, but in front of the kids that have struggled and hard, that are really trying hard, and
Michael,
she's very
yeah.
creative. I'm just confused a little bit. They even went on a co-side trip without my daughter, and because she wasn't in the advanced class, and I kept thinking to myself, you know, taxpayers' money, and then, you know, my daughter would have probably learned just as much as the advanced kids at Cosine would have had a lot of fun.
Michael,
so
you
were depressed about that too.
Yeah, Michael, you have some pretty strong thoughts about the whole gratification process in general.
You know, you brought up two important things. One that I don't want to address, and that is why, you know, why are some kids in one group and another, and some have one privilege, and others, but not that I think it's not legitimate. It's a different topic. I'm sorry that was. I don't mean to diminish it either. I just wanted to try to focus on the fact that the idea of awarding kids when they're learning is really just this side of asinine, because it isn't motivating for the kids that win, and it's dispiriting for the kids that lose. There's the whole point is to create a culture where every child there is excelling in various ways. And if it's not in this subject, it's in another subject. And if the kid is just generally struggling with all subjects, then there should be another way that you figure out that child shines and is achieving, you know, the recognition and warmth of a classroom. And there's really no place, unless it's everybody. Everybody each week you're going to be, you know, rewarded or awarded or shined. upon this way, but I don't see any sense in that.
There really are schools that do that, Michael, and do that, and your child would not be left out because there would be an area that is honored that she would fit beautifully. And I think if you go in and really just articulate and say, this is happening around the country, they are opening. If you're going to do this award bit, as we say, this award shtick, if you're going to do it, open it up so that every child has a chance to have that feeling.
Thanks, Russell,
Thank
for your
you
call.
Guys.
Yeah, take
Thank
care. Beth in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Beth.
Hi, Ann. I call in quite frequently. I just have a comment. I've heard a lot of negative, or I have perceived a lot of negative comments about technology and clicking on this and clicking on that. And, you know, Google now has its own website just for educators on how they can use their technology and the labs that they have and all the different ways that they can apply that. That's open to anybody who wants it, and it's free. Second of all, some of the things that the parks are doing where, you know, you can follow the owls online or you can track what's going on with the red-tailed hawks with the live cams and things like that, you know, it doesn't have to be an either-or. And the fact of the matter is that just like, you know, when you brought up the person who was talking about the importance of whether or not the importance of handwriting is diminishing, it doesn't mean that it has to be one side or the other side, but there are certain things that are changing. And I've worked with high school students that were higher level in their graduating and going into colleges and getting acceptance offers for colleges. And they, you know, have technological skills that I wouldn't have dreamed of having. And yet, they're still able to do other things. And I had one guy, I really wish I could have gotten him into doing more creative work because he was brilliant, but he chose to stick with computer systems because he knew he would get a job. Mm-hmm. So, and a stable job.
Technology, yeah.
That's what I want to say. You know, okay. It doesn't have to be an either or. And
it's a valued comment, and I'm sorry you mistook our impatience or irritation at the idea of kids just gaming and using their, I mean, there are two things that are key. There has to be social interaction among kids. They have to look at each other and talk to each other and have a way of reading one another's bodies and enjoying play and laughter, which isn't necessarily coming through just by yourself at a screen. And no one is doubting the fact that there's marvels that have been unleashed, libraries of information, you know, ways to be creative on the computer that are invaluable and that a citizen in this time needs to know.
Beth, thanks for your call. We appreciate it.
Okay.
Take care.
Okay.
Roger in Chillicothe, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Roger.
Hey, Ann. Hey, I grew up in the, born in the 60s, and my dad was a metallurgical engineer. I have no interest in that. He never encouraged any interest in that. But when Halloween came around, today you see all these elaborate carving on pumpkins. I have black and white Polaroid pictures of him with elaborate carving of pumpkins, and he never let that side, seem like that creative side, show to us kids. And then we pull those photos out and we look at them, and you look over at him when he looks at them, and you can see a twinkle and a little curl of his smile, like, you know, mm-hmm. they appreciate that, and he never passed that on, and I never got any of that from him, but I got I create being a rough carpenter, and he seems to create being a finished carpenter, and I think creativity is all what your level of comfort is with your creativity. I think every kid's creativity is creative, and they may not excel in math or science or English, but what if they have any inkling in that, maybe they've reached their creative potential in that subject.
Roger?
Yeah.
Oh, you hung up.
Yeah, sure.
Just to note, Michael has a book that he worked on with a famed pumpkin carver, and I thought he might mention it, you might share it. But, you know, that's going back to encouraging families to share their passion, their interest with children. Sometimes they think it's not important, but as you said, it really is important. Michael, tell your pumpkin book.
Oh, it's Night of the Pumpkin Heads, and it's illustrated with jack-o'-lanterns by a renowned carver named Hugh McMahon. Just very odd book.
That's a nice story about your dad, Roger.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic. And, you know, and he never said anything. If we would, you know, it looked like we kicked the pumpkin. But hey, that was our face, and that was, he was proud of it, and we put a candle in there just right along with his. So.
That's really great. Well, thank you. Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
I want you to read Michael Rosen from your new book, The Hound Dog's Haiku and Other Poems for Dog Lovers. It won't take long because haiku is by nature very short.
This is one about the golden retriever.
That's my favorite one.
I've had a couple in my life, and there's a pond that on the farm that I share. And I adhere to the sort of classic way that we teach haiku, even though it's a Japanese form and English and Japanese don't correspond directly. I do the 5-7-5, and I'm perfectly comfortable with that. Stick like a wide grin, panting, chest deep in the lake, eye of each ripple. In the back of the book, I have some sort of notes about the poems and the dogs themselves, but there's just no mistaking that when this is that moment on a still pond and the dog is panting with the thing and every heave of the chest sends out ripples so that the dog is standing there. I mean, just a glorious moment that, you know, as I think about haiku, I want to be able to read something halfway in a sense, and you take it the other half in your mind.
And I love the stick like a wide grin, you know, take our dogs for walks in the morning, and it's just, oh, you got a stick.
Yeah.
What a nice stick that is.
Yep.
Just
stick
so proud. Thank you, Michael Rosen,
for reading that.
Michael in Clintonville, we're running out of time, but I wanted to squeeze you in. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. I appreciate it. I know we're short. I'll keep it short myself. I've heard when your guests have been on before, and I have to call in. I'm going to be 50 years old. And I recall two teachers I had from fourth grade. I went to a suburban Detroit school, several of them because the community was growing so quick. The last elementary school I went to was considered an open concept design.
Mm-hmm.
There were no walls, no doors, carpeted floor, everything. The two instructors, and I have to give credit because they were just fantastic people, Laura Hack and Fred Johnson. They encouraged, and between the two of them, they had a combined class, and they probably had close to 60 kids, and they encouraged almost every kid they could get a hold of, whatever your little niche was, just go for it. And the littlest, the smallest detail, they found it, and they would compliment you. And I'm getting back to what Katie with her son, that little thing that he loves, encourage it, because later on in life, I wasn't too crazy about school, but knowing those two teachers I had that gave me that boost or the kick, it made it tolerable. They were wonderful people. When we graduated from high school, all of our classes, we got cards from them. Congratulations on graduating high school. I mean, these people were, they were just devoted, loving educators that you hear of them, but I don't think their praises are sung out enough. And they have made an influence. If I have time.
Michael, I'm sorry. We're out of time. I'm very sorry,
Michael,
though.
Thank you.
I'm glad I got to give kudos to them. They were wonderful people, and their influence is still with me today.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, I always love those shows when we talk about our teachers. Michael Rosen, author of The Hound Dog's Haiku and Other Poems for Dog Lovers. Thanks for joining us today.
Always, always.
And also, Mimi Chenfeld, as usual. What fun to have you on the show.
Thank you, and what a great last call.
It was. Michael was great. Thanks for joining us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for 89.7 comes from COSI, presenting Race, Are We So Different? This exhibit looks at the science and history of race in America with photography, artifacts, and hands-on activities. It's an exhibit for the whole family. More information at COSI.org.